Welcome back to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a place where we talk about all different types of creative arts therapies, expressive therapies, and creative approaches to therapy. My name is Kate Shannon. I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor as well as a board certified music therapist, and I am your host. Today's episode is part two of a really wonderful episode with Ella Riley, who's talking with us about storytelling, play, art, and using storytelling within our sessions in a multitude of ways. So Ella talks with us. If you haven't checked out part one, definitely go listen to part one. But Ella talks about using storytelling in non-directive ways primarily, but using that through books, reading books, as well as creating stories within sessions, creating stories within sand and sand play. So lots of different ways to use stories. And we know how powerful stories are because of books like The Whole Brain Child and Dan Siegel. And we know that telling stories is a way for children to process what's happening to them and to find the words for that if they don't have the words. And sometimes they don't. And sometimes that is just stories through symbols in a sand tray. But we know that storytelling is a way for emotional processing to happen. So it's a majorly powerful tool for us to be utilizing in our sessions. So Ella's going to dig in a little bit more and tell us about storytelling in this episode. And Ella is a fully trained art psychotherapist. She has an MA in art therapy from the Crawford College of Art and Design. She has a PGD in Principles of Art Therapy in Crawford College Art and Design. She has diplomas in teletherapy and play therapy for adults and children. She has a multitude of experience of working with children, adolescents, young adults, and families. And my favorite thing, I think, about listening to Ella talk about what she does is her passion for what she does. It's really contagious and captivating. So this was a blast talking with Ella, and I know that you'll enjoy it. Again, if you haven't listened to part one, go check that out. Also, as a reminder, if you haven't hopped on our newsletter yet, I recommend doing that because there is a freebie going out all about storytelling too. So a resource just for you, some storytelling prompts using words, pictures, or symbols. And that is a freebie, and there's a bigger resource you can get too if you'd like the bigger full one that has over 100 different prompts as well. That will be in the newsletter. So there's a link for that in our show notes. But let's head into this episode, and we will talk a little bit more on the other side about some of the books that Ella shares that she used within session, and I'm going to add a few of my favorites too.
And then I have another lovely example of, you know, a child very much taking what they need and knowing what they need. And I had this little guy in, and this was ages ago, but he had come in. It was pretty obvious that it was kind of an insecure attachment. So a lot of distress with new people and unable to leave mom's side, you know, very much stuck to her like glue, you know, wouldn't move without mom moving. So we did a lot of work around that, and we eventually got into sessions on our own. And in one of our sessions, he walked over to my books because I have them quite low down, all the kiddie ones. Mm-hmm. And he picked up the one, what is it called? Owl Babies. Have you come across that one?
I haven't. I'm writing it down though.
Owl Babies. And I have it behind me here. Let me grab the author, because it's a really beautiful one. Yeah, it's called Owl Babies, and it's by Martin Waddell, and it's illustrated by Patrick Brenson. Now, it's a relatively old book. I got a secondhand version on Amazon, but he picked this up, and the story is basically about one night these three baby owls wake up and mom is gone. Okay, and they're in the dark, and they're in a forest, and it's nighttime, and the three babies react very differently, but the youngest is distraught and very worried and very much just cries out for mom throughout the book. And then of course mom eventually comes back after they try to comfort each other and do all sorts of things. Mom comes back, and I just love her reaction, because she comes back and she says, "What's all the fuss? You knew I'd come back." And I remember he picked out this book, and I read it to him, and he kind of looked at me when I finished. He looked up at me and looked back at the little baby and put his hand over the smallest owl, and then just closed the book and put it back on the shelf. But that was him. You know, he's that baby owl. You know, as soon as mom goes upstairs in the house or goes to the bathroom or goes to work, he's worried the whole time, you know, where's mom? Where's mom? Where's mom? Who's that baby L?
Is she coming back?
Exactly.
Yes.
And it was just so beautiful that he had chosen that himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that it, you know, it was in that metaphor, it was an animal, but still realistic, not too much in fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And he gravitated towards it, which was just beautiful.
Yes, you could see and hear that it resonated with him. I mean, like just, you know, putting his hand on it like that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not me directing him towards it. Yeah. You know, I did actually admittedly put it, I think it was second in the pile.
Oh,
towards
yeah.
I tried to pick out books and put them at the top of the piles.
Yep.
For each client, it doesn't always happen because it's so crazy busy sometimes. But I remember beforehand putting, you know, a few that I thought might be, you know, a nice book for him. And he picked up that one. And I just, you know, when you just kind of want to punch in the air and go, yes,
yes,
it's amazing.
It worked. Oh my
God. Picked
it.
Working.
Well, I love that example. That's so that too of like, I think that sometimes there's this like this thought with non-directive work that it's like, so, you know, we're so not involved, but like that what you just explained in setting up the environment to set it up a little bit or to kind of have these gentle nudges or these things that might resonate. Like that's a big part of non-directive work is having that, like the book on, you know, next to the pile, you know, maybe not the first one, the second one, you know, but setting up that environment. So that particular client might notice something that seems like it resonates with them.
Yeah. And I know that all therapists have experienced that, you know, yes, you might be in the session working your ass off for whatever amount of time, mm-hmm. but it's what's happening outside of sessions and the prep that you're doing and the notes that you're taking and the conversations you're having with parents, you know, mm-hmm. that's a lot of work as well. You know, that there is a lot that goes into just those 45 minute slots or whatever they are.
Yes, yes. And those can be just as exhausting, especially with, I think, the movers, you know, the kids who are moving and grooving. And I'm like, I'm sweating. Like, I am working.
Yeah. I know. I remember I recently did like almost a movement map in my notes after a child had left because he just couldn't settle.
Yeah.
And the whole page was just a squiggle. He was just back and forth and up and down and in and out. And everywhere. And it summed up what was going on for him beautifully, but I just had to put it down because sometimes it can be so overwhelming that you need to do something to just park it for a moment. You just, you know, let that wash off you a little.
I love that, a movement map. That is a genius way of like, I never think of doing that, of having, I'm not even sure if I think there'd probably be some way I could do that in my notes, but like having a blank space where you could draw something and put that of like, this is what it literally looked like in session today from, you know, a step back of what, you know, our movements.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, when I was younger, I went to a mind mapping class. I don't know if you've ever come across that before.
I've heard about it, but I don't know it very well.
So it's basically a way of studying or doing notes. So it's a bit more visual and less wordy. Mm-hmm. And there's a very particular way of doing it where, you know, I think I was taught for like history or something that I really just couldn't deal with. And, you know, it would start with one date or one word or one thing that you had to learn about, and it would stem off into different things, but it was all in images. So whatever would remind you by image of that particular thing is what you would draw. So I actually find that I never really used mind mapping in school or college when I had to do any study, but I find in my notes now, because, you know, sometimes you are in a hurry and the next client is coming and you've just had to clean the entire room top to bottom for the 10th time that day, and you're trying to do your notes and you don't want to leave anything out. But I mean, I'm not a fast writer, and I am one of those, everything's on paper. You know, I'm pen and paper all the time. I don't have a laptop. I have my iPad, but I try not to type. I just prefer to be able to write it. But I mean, mine's just littered with images. You know, if I can't write it down quickly, I'll do some images that'll remind me. So when I go back later on, I can kind of fill it in verbally a little bit more.
Yes. Oh, I love that. So I'm totally going to start including that into my, that resonates with me so much just as I'm a visual learner. And I think visually see stuff and like, ooh, I lock in very quickly with visual. And it's so funny to not even think of that option in doing our notes, even if it's just like our psychotherapy, my psychotherapy notes that are, I keep on paper of just having a more visual description of what was happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know why I started doing that in the first place, but I do remember that I think it kind of started because, you know, sometimes a child would make something and they want to bring it home, so you haven't got a photograph of it, or they'll do a sand tray and then they'll flatten it and put everything away and you're going, no, just leave it up. Like, I will, let me photograph it from every angle when you leave and then I will take it apart. But obviously you can't say that.
Yes.
That's just what they need to do in the moment. So, you know, I do often find that I'm doing really small little sketches of, you know, placing things on the page where it was in the sand tray and, you know, writing what it was. And I think it kind of stemmed from that, when there was little parts that I was kind of missing where they had taken with them or had changed in the process, that I could still have some sort of memory of it on paper.
Yes. To be able to see it and with all of, you know, depending on where it is, I'm thinking of the book, Images of Resiliency, one of the sand tray. Oh, just being able to see, like, I feel like it's that thing of you could read in words what the sand tray looks like, but then when you see the image of it, there's so much more that you get from it of like, oh,
so, yeah.
Yeah.
And I even find as well, and it goes for kind of all of my notes, that I need to get it all down and I need to photograph the sand tray or the clay piece or whatever it is. And then I need to come back to it later on or the next day or the next week, because I need fresh eyes. That, like, a lot has happened. There's inevitably transference and counter transference. There's a lot happening in that time. Yeah. And, you know, you have to get ready then for the next session. So I find it's easier for me anyway, in my process, to then go back with fresh eyes, usually first thing in the morning, and really look at stuff, you know, get out my symbols book, you know, work through things, look back on my notes and see, did I miss anything? Can I thread anything together? So it's so important for me to have some sort of visual and not just all words.
Yes. Oh, that's so powerful. That's such a great way of the coming back with new eyes and giving it a break, especially if it's been a long day and you're done and there's just, you can stare at it all you want, but you got to come back when you're just like your cup is refilled.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yes. Well, with that too, with, you know, we've touched on sand tray and storytelling, and even with art, with all of these different kind of expressive modalities and creativity, how do you end up kind of combining some of those things together? Or does it, you know, what does it look like when art, sand tray, play, storytelling, when they kind of merge together in a session?
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting because this is very much about storytelling, and I do think that there's a story being told in each session. You know, if a child is bouncing from one thing to another, there, that's the story, you know. So sometimes, you know, going from the sand tray over to the clay is very natural and it's very easy and it's a continuation of what they started in the first one. And then other times it's a really quick, I need to stop, I need to move on to something else, it's very urgent, they need to leave what they had originally made behind and, you know, stop processing that and almost just start fresh. Like it can be too overwhelming in some situations. It can be too much, or maybe it's just done. That's done for today. I'm going to do something else, a little bit more lighthearted, or, you know, let's blow some bubbles and just get a little bit more zen, you know? So again, it's kind of that story, and you can see, you know, that they very much go where they need to go, but there's a reason for that as well.
Mm-hmm. That the overarching, like looking at the session as a whole in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you so much about a child, even just their movements within the room and the body language within those movements. It tells you so much. Again, it's all about that behavior being some sort of expression. You know, they're trying to tell you something. They're trying to say something.
Yes. And it is that, you know, like you had said before, of when you're that witness to it, and when you really, you know, I think of just like really pulling out my feelers of like, all right, I'm trying to absorb and be a sponge as much as possible. And when you can do that, it's like, you can see and sense and feel like, oh wow, I just felt that like rise or that dysregulation as we moved from the sand tray over to the clay. Yeah. Like that feels like they need more grounding right now. Like I feel that, like I can feel that that was too much, or they got to something that maybe looked scary, or whatever it was.
Exactly. And I mean, so interestingly, you know, like has come up again and again on this, that the child goes where they know they need to go. You know, the odd time I might suggest, let's blow some bubbles for the last 10 minutes if I feel like we've just been up in the air the whole time. Or, you know, I might say, okay, well, let's just make some Play-Doh and do something a little bit more physical, a little bit, you know, get some of that aggression out that's maybe built up. But generally, on a whole, I find a lot of the time the children gravitate towards the things that they need in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's more of like, we were talking a little bit about this off air of trusting the process of like, yes. You're talking about dibs and how beautiful Virginia Axline just trusts the process. Like she is fully in it and just goes with it. And it's that, like that part of it of kind of relinquishing to the process.
Yes. Which is not easy by any means. It is not an easy thing. I mean, if you have a child in a room for an hour and, you know, they're getting paint on the ceiling and there's paint in your hair and there's paint over the other side of the room, there's glitter everywhere. Oh my God, the glitter.
Oh,
and
glitter.
You just want to step in and you want to clean it up and you want to stop and you want to do, but that's not for them. You know, we discussed it before that's for you. That is all for you. Like my want to clean up in sessions is not of benefit to that child. You know, me getting the paint off their toes is not going to help them in that moment. So it can, you're really fighting yourself sometimes and having that inner dialogue of like, no, you need to not step in, you know, really just respect that process, you know, be that witness, you know, be there to hold that and keep them safe. And when it gets to the point where it's not safe, then you can jump in. But till then, you know, you really have to know your role.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Trusting that process and just kind of being in it, which it is so, so hard. I'm curious too, because I feel like this comes up a lot. I know when I was first getting into non-directive work, and I know there's still times where I feel this too, depending on the parent, but part of working with kids is part of working with parents. There are times when parents don't quite, you know, this approach that where it's not so, you can't see it, you know, it's not linear. It's very different. What does that look like when you're explaining that to parents or for a parent who might not get that, you know, it's happening in the process and we'll get there when the child is ready? What does that look like in the part of it?
I mean, I think it's very misunderstood a lot of the time. I think that, you know, I'm very open about it being non-direct, and I would still get emails or messages from parents in between sessions and go, oh, you know, this such and such happened, maybe you could bring that up in today's session. And I find myself going, okay, thank you very much for the heads up, but very non-directly, just not, you know, going into that at all, not saying, okay, yeah, of course I will, because I'm not going to. Your child will probably 99% bring that up in our session, but that is up to them. You know, because it, again, it's their space. It's very much, you know, when they step in the door, they are really in charge of what happens in here. And that autonomy and that trust is so important for the relationship. So, you know, I do find with parents that, you know, I'm very open and I explain the process and I explain what's coming up. And, you know, I'm clearly enthusiastic about it and I try to express that as best I can. But even some parents who try their best to understand still don't, you know, you do often find that sometimes unless you're really in it and you're experiencing it and you're doing it, that it's too unfathomable. You know, again, it's that idea that this is so simple, this is so easy, you know, anyone can do this, you're playing with children, but you know, the reality is all the other clogs that are moving in the background and all those other different things that are being put in place are then having a difference. but it can be hard, you know, it can be really hard for anyone to understand. I mean, even before I did my training and did workshops, I kind of thought, oh, I don't know. I mean, it sounds nice. We'll do some painting and we'll do some mindful coloring in books and, you know, I'll feel great. But then you actually experience what it can bring up, and, you know, that true, deep, gooey, unconscious stuff that you didn't even realize was there is showing its ugly head, and you have to face it in some way or another. Unless you've really experienced that, it's hard to explain.
It is. It's so funny, even the words that you said with, that's nice, you know, that like, that kind of like, okay, well, this is nice, but ... And I literally, yeah. I think I've had parents say that exact phrase, like, this sounds nice, but yeah.
They're going to have so much fun. They love art. And you're like, well, that's great, because I love art too. So,
yeah,
you know, it's tricky, because I mean, obviously you want parents or guardians to be aware of what's going on. And, you know, I try to be extremely open, because they're trusting you with their child. But
yes,
it does get to a point sometimes, and not all the time at all, that with some parents, that it's just kind of useless explaining the depths of some of the stuff that might be coming up in particular ways.
Right.
Because sometimes we just can't wrap our head around that. You know, it's like fairy tales. You can't always wrap your head around something you can't, you know, physically feel and see in front of you.
Yes, that's really tangible, especially I think with like some of, you know, if parents are very like concrete type of personality, you know, or very data driven, or, you know, in that way, it's like, this might be really hard to, you know, as open as you can be, but, you know, to really see or to really understand it, like, you almost have to be fully immersed to get that picture.
Yeah. And it might be terrible, but in some ways I'm almost more driven because, you know, they're not really getting it and they're kind of just thinking we're having a bit of fun. But then when they start to experience the change in their child, or, you know, start to see the positive, you know, aspects that it's brought up for them and those positive changes that they've made themselves, then, you know, you kind of get that, oh, thank you very much. You know, they really enjoyed your time. And you're thinking, well, you know what? They did the work. They did it all. They just facilitated it. And I'm so glad that you get to see the difference that it makes.
Yes. Yes. It's like we're creating the space, facilitating it. They are agents of change.
Yeah. And then they, you know, those parents can very much come out and go, okay, look, I don't fully understand what's happening in there or what happened, but I know that it, you know, it helped my child in whatever way it did, you know?
Yes.
So having that, you know, that result, I guess, or that reaction is so useful as well, you know, because there isn't this, you know, this database where you can track exactly, you know, the difference each session has made in the child and everything that it's done for them. There's not this little logbook, and you can hand over a test result. It's not like that at all, you know. And often I find, even meeting with parents, you might ask them, you know, has something changed? Are they sleeping better? And they'll go, oh, well, now that you mention it, yeah, they're sleeping way better. And you're going, yeah, I knew they were, you know. I knew that already. Uh-huh. But like, you need checking. To be aware of that.
Yes. Yes. Bringing that awareness like full circle too, of like, oh, this is, or pointing out, hearing progress. I think sometimes parents will just be kind of like updating you, and it's like, wait a second, go back to what you just said. That's right. Really different from where we were 2 months ago.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's so wonderful to be able to do that, not only for them, but for ourselves, for our own work, to be able to see the change outside of the space, because it's different in here. Yes. You know, it's a little bubble of warmth and gooiness. I'm bringing up gooey a lot today.
I love it. I love it.
But it's gooey in both good and bad. Yes. But, you know, it is a little bubble. So what you're experiencing, what change you're seeing in the child during sessions might not necessarily translate outside of the space in the same way. So it's great to be able to check in with parents and really pick their brains and go, oh, hang on, so that's different. Or, oh, now they're able to do that, or they don't do that anymore. And actually see that, you know, some of the changes that you're seeing in here are actually translating to the outside world.
Oh, it's the best, like the best feeling. Like, makes all that gooiness is just like, yes.
Yeah.
It's happening. Oh, yes. I love that. I love the gooiness too. It's such a great
term. I love the gooiness. I love it. And I mean, kids love the gooiness, even just in the sense that I've never made so much Play-Doh in my life.
Yeah. Blind. Glitter, you know? All the mess, making the mess.
And I love it. The thing is, like, and we were talking about kind of, you know, stopping yourself from wanting to, you know, to having to step in and clean up that mess. Like, I remember when I was younger, and even now, I love making a mess. Like, I love if I have the chalks out and I'm covered in them, and then the cat lies on them and she's walking around the house. Like, I just love it. I mean, you're just in it.
Yes.
So where is this idea that you need to come in and clean it? You need to, that's not useful. That's not useful in the space at all. You just need to enjoy it.
Yes. And so many kids, I feel like this happens more times than not, are appalled that they can make a mess. Like, they're like, wait, what? I can make a mess? Me too. Like, talk about the gooiness. And it's like, this is a space where you can make
a mess. Oh my God, it's brilliant. And then you find that with some kids, they'll go out of their way to make the biggest mess possible and use up every paint you have in the room and all of the glitter. And they're kind of looking at you like testing, like, is this too far? And you're going, no,
go for it. I can really put this glitter all over the floor. Yeah. I'll have a glittery floor. Wonderful.
I love it. And it's so different from what they're experiencing in school and at home and with their friends. And understandably, you know, there does need to be rules in place in different situations. But I mean, if there's overwhelming feelings or there's something difficult, you know, inside, being able to make a mess and express that is so important.
Yes. Yeah. To have that space, to have that space to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, I love that. Well, we touched on a couple, we mentioned a couple books of, we talked about Dibs, In Search of Self,
which,
and I'll make sure to link to all of these books and resources that we've talked about, but I'm curious too, if you can tell us a little bit more about some of those symbols books or other websites, other books, podcasts, whatever it is, that resources that you really love to lean on to dig more into storytelling or to play and art and sand tray. What are the resources that you love for this kind of stuff?
I mean, admittedly, generally books. I listen to podcasts as well, but mainly yours. And then I try and look up things that you've mentioned on it. But I mean, just a lot of books that have been recommended to me over the years. Like, I have symbol books, I have sand tray symbol books, I have, you know, contemporary play therapy books, and I'll of course send you them all on, but it's a mismatch of just things that I've been drawn towards, you know, that mightn't necessarily be other people's cup of tea. And I know that often we kind of gravitate towards certain things at a certain time. Like, I know we mentioned earlier that I was saying that as soon as I hear that buzzword trauma, when there's like a webinar on, or if there's a training, I immediately gravitate towards it lately. You know, I'm just all about it. And even if I think about it, a couple of years ago, it was grief. And I was really throwing myself into training around grief and what I could do in that situation. And so I kind of have a mismatch of loads of different resources, but it's mainly books. And, you know, pretty much all of them have been recommended by other therapists along the way, you know, other different creative therapists from all sorts of different backgrounds.
And leaning into those, I feel like those are the things. I mean, I am very much, I feel like I collect books in that I just like want, like, oh yes, I need that one, I need that one, and we'll someday have the time to read them all. But man, even just like skimming through some books too, when it's like something catches your eye, if you're in that kind of zone of like, I am all about soaking up trauma, or I'm all about soaking up grief or anxiety or whatever it is. And sometimes I feel like a book, you could even just read a chapter and it fulfills so much. It gives you so much, and even just one chapter.
And I'm one of those terrible people again, because I'm a very slow reader. I'm just not naturally a reader, but I love information.
Yeah.
Especially something I'm enthusiastic about. Like, I will dip into books. I have like all of my books here have post-its on different pages because I've just dipped in and a word has caught my eye and I've just ran with that. Like, for instance, I have in front of me Samplay, a source book for play therapists, and who's it by? Susan Perkins McNally. And I have never actually read it from front to back. I just haven't, but I have so many little post-its with notes. And at the back of that book, it has this really lovely section that's all about symbols, and it'll go on to kind of explain, you know, if a swan is put into Santre, what that might mean, or a princess or jewels. And it just then that sparks my interest. So I read that little bit and then I go to an even bigger symbols book and I look up what that says. Like, I have one here that, again, I got on Amazon, and it's just called The Dictionary of Symbols. But I like that it gives you kind of a world view, you know. So if you looked at turtle or a tortoise, it would tell you what, you know, Chinese culture might think of that, or what Irish folklore, mythical, you know, and it gives you kind of background. So I find that useful because depending on the client, I can try and link it towards, you know, their personality and their experience and not my own, because I might look at, you know, a particular reasoning behind one symbol and go, oh yeah, I connect with that. But that's me. That's not the child coming into the room. So, you know, it can be tricky to find the connection for the child. But I think the more resources you have and the more you look up, and admittedly, even just Googling it sometimes, you know, the symbolism of, you know, a wolf and getting all these different links, you're able to find something that is important for that client.
Yes, you can kind of patchwork it together, of pulling those pieces together.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. And I have a book too. It's specifically animals and nature and myth and symbolic. Ooh. Book. I think it's actually an art therapist who,
oh,
and
lovely.
A Jungian therapist, so very symbol. And
but oh, it does, you're gonna pass that on to me.
Yes. And I think the best part is, like you were just saying about the other one, where it gives not only what it might symbolize in like Santre and dreams, but mm-hmm. like in, you know, in Norse mythology, this is what this stood for.
Yeah.
And in this culture, it's you know, symbolized as this, and it might be this in Native American culture. So like you get this big, big worldview of this one symbol where you can really see like, okay, where does this fit? You know, does this fit, and where does it fit with this client?
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes you'll get the client telling you, you know, you'll be down on the floor playing animals and there'll be a dog and they'll say, oh, a man's best friend. And then they'll keep playing. And you're like, well, you told me what you wanted to tell me there. That's what you associate dogs with, you know, a man's best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Like keeping our ears open too for that when that does come up.
Yeah. And I mean, even when you have, you know, a teenager or an adult in sessions and they make something or they do something in the sand tray or clay or draw something, you know, it's very easy to say, you know, what do you associate that with? And then you in that split second have that symbolism for them and that the meaning behind that for them. But with younger children, it can often kind of stop them in their tracks. Like if you were to say, oh, what does that remind you of? Then you might stop that process.
Yeah.
You know, and then it might be harder to pick that up. I mean, sometimes it's appropriate to say that to children, like, oh, what does that remind you of? Oh, green reminds me of grass. And I love putting my feet in grass. And the one time we went on this holiday, and they'll go off on a little story, and you'll find out so much just from asking that really simple, you know, open-ended question. Mm-hmm. But other times you have to go searching yourself a little bit more.
Yeah. You've got to get into the background for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love that. I love symbolism stuff. It's so, so much fun. And I will link to those books too in the show notes. All the books that we've talked about, I'll put in there.
Yeah.
So for listeners, if you are listening and it sounds like I need to get those ASAP, you can just hop into the show notes and grab them, which is exciting.
Amazing.
Yes. Well, Ella, I cannot say enough. This has been so amazing having you on, and just thank you for coming on and sharing with our listeners your expertise and what you do.
Thank you. It's been so easy to talk about what I love.
Yay. Wonderful. All right. I hope you have enjoyed part two of this awesome episode. I, again, absolutely love, love, love this topic. And it was so wonderful talking with Ella about her passion and what she does. And she shares so many wonderful resources. And I wanted to take some time to dig into those a little bit more here. There are several resources for books to bring into session for children that Ella shares with us. And share some of the ways that she uses them as well. And she sent these to me, and I want to make sure to include them here. I'm going to add a few of my favorites also. So one of the ones that Ella talked about was Owl Babies, and this is included in the show notes. You can link right to that, and is great for attachment issues or children feeling nervous, separation anxiety. And you heard Ella's story about this one too, and how beautiful, beautiful that story was. Another one is John Brown, Rose and the Midnight Cat. And Ella says that this is one that she uses for grief, particularly in grandparents, as well as illness. Always and Forever, a great book about grief, especially for father figures. This can be a really great one for that as well. That book is so beautiful. I absolutely love that book. A classic. I love this one too. And I love that this book is on my shelf and one of my favorite books. But Where the Wild Things Are. It can be a great book for medical trauma, anger, lack of autonomy. This book is, I feel like I've made up a million songs to go along with this book over and over again for so many different kids, because it just really hits somewhere special for a lot of kids. It's a very, very powerful book, and talk about the power of imagination and creativity too. It's absolutely fantastic. A few of the ones that I'd like to share, especially because I do work with a lot of children with anxiety, and have found a few different books that really work well for different children. Some children, again, really flock to certain books. One that I really like is called My Monster and Me. And this is a really, really great book for kind of like externalizing anxiety. If you are interested in learning more about that, actually, we talked about it in an episode with Jennifer that was only a few episodes ago. And in that episode, we talk about how you can externalize anxiety. And this is something I do all the time in session. So I love this book of My Monster and Me is kind of like the anxiety is the anxiety monster. And as a way to recognize that it's this thing that's part of us, but it's not quite us. And when we can externalize it, there's so many ways that we can process it and we can move through it. And creating the monster, you know, out of clay or out of art, or creating a song about the monster, creating a story about it and continuing on. And so this one is one of my favorite books to use for sure. Another few books that I find really helpful, specifically with anxiety too, and some of these are mindfulness related. The What Ifs is a great book about what ifing all the time. I say that phrase a lot. Like, are we what ifing? Are we what ifing? Because if we're just constantly in our mind, what if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens? We're really caught up in that anxiety. So there's a book called The What Ifs that's really great for that. Another one is called Don't Feed the Worry Bug. That is a children's book about worry. I also love this in that externalization factor of it's a worry bug and we're feeding the worry bug. I will most likely have an intervention that goes out in our newsletter about this too, because there's so many ideas of creating this bug and feeding it all these different anxieties. And I can just see that turning into so many different creative and expressive interventions after reading the book as well. Ruby Finds a Worry is a really great book as well. That's by Big Bright Feelings, another really great book about worry. And then one that I find really that's really awesome for mindfulness, which I find is helpful for anxiety. I do a lot of playing kind of mindfulness games with kids to kind of learn and feel the difference of, wow, when does my brain feel like it's caught up in the worry bug and when doesn't it? And usually when it doesn't is when we're being mindful and present. So there's a book called Catching Thoughts that's really great for that as well, and just being aware of your thoughts and catching them. So I love this book for that mindfulness piece too, of helping kiddos realize when their mind is gone or they're caught up in a thought or they're caught up in a feeling. storytelling, it is a great book for that. I am sure both Ella and I could probably share 1,000 other books because there are so many good books out there for children to support so many different needs. It's endless. I feel like I'm constantly, if only we had bookshelves big enough to like carry and put all of these books in. But if you have a favorite book, feel free to write in and let me know and I will share it on the podcast. If you have a great book for children or teens, write in, let us know. What is your favorite book to use in storytelling, to use in therapy, for any type of need as well? Feel free to hop on Instagram and let us know also on Instagram. We've got so many things going on over there, but hop on Ella's episode and share with us what book is your favorite to use in session. We'd love to hear it. And again, that's that community support of when we can help each other share different resources. It's the best part of something like this. So I encourage you to, if you've got a minute, hop on, send an email, tell us on Instagram, what do you like using in therapy for stories? All right. Don't forget to follow Ella on Instagram and support what she's doing over there. She always has some great content. And again, a joy speaking with Ella and hearing her passion. It's so contagious. And I absolutely love this topic of storytelling. You can join our newsletter for free downloads, creative ideas, exclusive access to our materials. And there is a storytelling freebie. Man, I do that every time. Storytelling freebie going out in the next week or so. So don't forget to hop on that and get that freebie if you are looking to use more stories within your sessions. Follow us on Instagram or Facebook, send us messages, comment, whatever you'd like to do. We love hearing from you. And again, you can always email us, Kate@creativetherapyumbrella.com. But you can also fill out our anonymous survey too. If there is something that you want to, a concern, questions, suggestions, feedback, that survey is for you. Your voice is really important to what we do over here at Creative Therapy Umbrella. So if you're looking for something specific, if you want to hear about a topic, if you want a specific person to come on and talk about what they do, let us know. I want to hear about it. It's so helpful to hear from you what you would like. So I highly encourage you, if you can, reach out to us and let us know. Otherwise, thank you so much for being a supporter. We're coming up on our 100th episode here in a couple episodes, and we're going to celebrate. And that could not be done without you as a listener. And I really, really appreciate it. And I hope that what we do here continues to support you. Again, if you feel like you need more support, reach out and let us know. That's what we're here to do. So thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your day and be creative.